Yesterday, we worked the best we could to wade through some of the statistics associated with eating disorders. Mm-hmm. It was a complicated mess.
Complicated mess. Tangle of fishing line. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's really a mess.
Today, we are entering another world of complicated mess.
Right. Not quite as bad.
Right. It's not quite as bad. But we're going to try to talk about the causes of eating disorders today. And there are a lot of, as is the case with many of the disorders that we talk about, there are a lot of theories and a lot of ideas. And then one of the things we like to always say is, if we really knew what caused it, we'd be able to prevent it. You know, if we knew, right, mm-hmm. our ability to prevent it would increase.
Right.
So we don't really know definitively what causes it. We know some things that are associated with it. We know some risk factors mm-hmm. and things like that, that we're going to talk about. But you know, when we get into causes, we enter into a somewhat of a statistical nightmare because statisticians really don't like it when you use the word cause. Because it's really difficult to determine causation.
Right. In our field, there isn't a single cause. We're not searching for a single cause.
Right.
We almost never search for a single cause.
Because there's almost never a single cause.
Right. And it's always a mix of biological factors, behavioral factors, mm-hmm. psychological factors, and environmental factors. And one of the things that
it's our biopsychosocial model.
Right. But one of the things that may help when we talk about causes of eating disorders, if you think in terms of three things, one are the psychological factors. And psychological factors are things like low self-esteem and helplessness and feelings of dissatisfaction, the mm-hmm. sorts of psychological things that people right. experience. So there are psychological factors. And then a second, there are traits, mm-hmm. personality traits. Things like impulsivity, okay, mm-hmm. or perfectionism, okay, mm-hmm. those are personality traits. They also contribute.
Right.
And then there are some contributing factors that I would call triggers.
Mm-hmm.
What are the things that trigger eating mm-hmm. disorders? You know, we used to think that bad parenting,
mm-hmm.
okay, now
mm-hmm.
we know it's right. not bad parenting, right. but we used to think, or it could be like teasing can be a trigger. Mm-hmm. You know, some children, boys and girls, are teased and teased and teased about right. their weight until finally they go into drastic calorie reduction. Or you mentioned yesterday wrestling. You know,
right.
kids who
different sports
wrestle.
Wrestling, gymnastics.
Gymnastics is one. Mm-hmm. And kids who wrestle, youngsters who wrestle within a weight class.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like there's always this drive to go down a weight class because
mm-hmm,
you're stronger, but if you go down a weight class, that's better. And so they have to do restrictive dieting and exercising
yeah.
to lose 5 or 6 or 8 pounds.
I remember I was on the wrestling team in middle school,
mm-hmm.
Just 1 year, and mm-hmm. I remember seeing guys wearing like black
yes.
trash bags
right.
while they went.
Mm-hmm.
running to hold in the heat so that they would
sweat more
and lose more
get rid of that water
mm-hmm.
weight, right? And we had kids who would actually faint in school,
right.
you know, they were in middle school, and they would faint because they were dieting so restrictive that
mm-hmm.
they would faint. But things like stress and trauma
mm-hmm.
and all those sorts of things that can trigger, mm-hmm. like negative emotions,
right.
Can trigger an eating disorder.
Right.
So if you think in terms of the psychological factors, personality traits,
mm-hmm.
and then triggers, if you think of those three things, and that sort of, then the last is your biology,
right.
you know, because we know this runs in families.
We
know that this is, there's a pretty high heritability factor with
right.
these. So that's the biological part.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right. So let's go through some of that quickly. So when we talk about the biology,
mm-hmm.
one of the things we refer to is genetics.
Right.
So there have been twin studies and,
mm-hmm.
and all kinds of different, there's all kinds of different ways that we can look at heritability and genetic predispositions
right.
and things like that. And what we've seen is now yesterday we weighted, I don't know how effectively, but we weighted through some of the statistics related to eating disorders. And we talked about how, you know, with anorexia nervosa, it's about 1%. With
right.
bulimia, it was about 1.5%. And with binge eating disorder, it was about 3%. Well, when it comes to the prevalence of eating disorders within like a twin study, so if you, okay, so if you're just a random person in the population, you have between a 1 and a 3% chance of having one of those, you know, that's the prevalence rate. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that. It's tough. If you are a twin and you have a twin that has one of those disorders,
right,
now all of a sudden your risk is 40 to 60%.
That's right. It's a significant difference.
Right.
So that suggests strongly that there's a heritability factor.
Right. Okay. Right.
That you get, people call it the fat gene. It's not right. a fat gene.
Right.
There isn't a single gene. And the reason we don't have genetic studies, this was interesting. It takes 10,000 individuals to do a genetic study.
Yeah.
Because it's not a single gene.
Right.
It's several genes.
Right.
And so to get enough people to study all the genes that are contributing,
right,
you'd have to do a sample of 10,000.
Right.
Nobody has a sample of 10,000.
Right.
I mean, it'd have to be multi-site
right.
around the world.
Well, those are the longitudinal studies that right. we see at hospitals, where almost every baby that's born at the hospital is enrolled,
right,
and they just follow them over time. And right. you know,
and
you have some of those that have been going on for decades and
right.
decades.
There are several in England, several yeah. studies. Well, there's mm-hmm. a couple here, but there's one study in England that's been going on for
like a generation,
you know,
it must
or be two. At least one generation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we know from our twin data mm-hmm. that that there is likely very strong probability right. of a genetic predisposition, mm-hmm. a heritability
right.
Risk for eating disorders in general.
Right.
We don't know what the gene is. We don't know exactly what causes that from a genetic perspective. What causes right. that increased risk? But we know it exists,
right? And it's about 11 times.
Right.
If you have a first degree relative,
mm-hmm.
You have about an 11. It's about 11 times more likely that you're going to have an eating
right.
disorder than if you don't have a person with an eating. So it does run in families,
right?
Okay,
yeah. So that again, that suggests that there is a genetic predisposition for it.
Right.
We believe that there's some issues related to the serotonin system. So when mm-hmm. we think about not just, you know, specific to the genes, when we talk about the biology of the brain, there are some chemical and functional differences,
right.
Again, related to like serotonin and some other
mm-hmm.
Of those systems that may be implicated with
right.
eating disorders.
Whenever we talk about biological contributions, we always try to separate it into the genetic contributions and then brain contributions.
Right.
Okay, and so.
And it's difficult to completely differentiate
right.
those because,
you
of
don't.
Course, the brain you have is the one that you inherit.
Right.
And so
we inherit our parents' brain chemistry,
right.
like we inherit their shoe size, eye color, hair
right.
color, body type. We also inherit our parents' or our ancestors' brain chemistry.
Right.
Okay. And so, yeah, they come from the same thing. But if you separate genetics from brain,
right.
It's a little bit easier to conceptualize. So there are some, but the neurobiology of eating disorders is a very complicated
mm-hmm.
Place to go.
Right.
And I don't know of any way to really simplify that yet.
Right.
We'll have to work a little bit more on that.
Yeah, just a simple example is, as we will talk about later, a little bit today and later this week, some of the theories or some of the comorbid conditions with eating disorders are things like anxiety and depression and some of those
mm-hmm.
kind of things. And we know that there's some implications with serotonin. I mentioned serotonin a moment ago.
Right, right.
We know that binge eating, for example, especially binge eating carbohydrates, simple carbohydrates, significantly increases serotonin in
right.
your serotonin production in your body,
mm-hmm.
Which is what, you know, when we refer to like stress eating, that's what's happening is you're stress eating to significantly increase serotonin, which helps decrease the stress. So if your body isn't producing as much serotonin as it otherwise could or should,
right.
then you may be at risk, elevated risk for something
mm-hmm.
like a binge eating disorder or
right.
eating disorder in general, because you have those
right.
that brain chemistry that needs
mm-hmm.
the extra boosts.
Right. So we've seen serotonin is one, dopamine has been implicated, and other neurochemicals. Mm-hmm. Okay. But that's a complicated business,
yeah.
And one that I'd really like to talk about here, but it may be a separate. The neurobiology of eating disorders could be a very large, separate topic.
Right.
Okay.
So. Yeah. It wasn't until we started doing some of the research for these podcasts that it's you realize how complicated it is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
right. So absolutely. Yeah. So all right. So that's
the biology.
That's
of
the
it.
Biology of it.
Right.
So we have our biopsychosocial model.
Right.
So now the psychological part of it. We have behaviors.
Right.
And we have personality and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, there is certainly an aspect of eating habits and eating behaviors that are psychologically based. I already talked about, I mentioned anxiety and depression and some of those things. And so when you have some of those psychological stressors, it's going to increase your risk for, I was going to say abusing food, but that's sort of what
it's
it is.
Really
you're abusing food.
I put it in the same category as substance abuse. I mean, I think we can use... We can use food as medicine. I think we also self-medicate with food. I think many people, when we talk about psychological factors, are self-medicating with food.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So you have those kinds of issues related to anxiety and depression and that kind of stuff.
And I think consuming, maybe that's a good way to do it, consuming larger amounts of food than usual is self-medicating, using food as medicine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're self-medicating using food.
Right.
Severe calorie restriction does something else. Okay.
It can be managing another psychological stressor.
Right.
But it's
you're still managing your stress,
mm-hmm.
but you're doing it in a different way with a different result.
Right.
Because as we said yesterday, severe calorie restriction leads to telling your body that there's not enough food around, and so appetite decreases.
Right.
Okay. When appetite decreases, you eat less.
Right.
When you eat less, you eat less.
Right.
And so you get into this vicious cycle where suddenly you're not hungry at all. I mean, you should be, but you've shut down those mechanisms because of severe calorie restriction.
Yeah, absolutely. Some other psychological and sort of temperamental personality types of issues that relate to this would be things like body dysmorphic,
right?
I'm not necessarily talking about the disorder, body dysmorphic disorder. I'm talking about the idea that you don't see that you're hypercritical of your body, your body shape, or certain areas of your body, and because of being overcritical of it, you engage in different behaviors that may. And this is where that anorexia comes in, where you're doing severe restriction. You're cutting back because you're trying to improve the shape of your body, but it may be because of misperception.
That's right. And there's two kinds of misperception. One is you don't see yourself accurately at all.
Right.
And there's the famous photograph of the young girl who's obviously grossly underweight, but she's looking at the mirror at this fluffy corpuscular creature, and it's not her at all, but that's what she sees.
Right.
Then there's another one, which is a misperception that is a little bit different, where you exaggerate a feature. For example, look at my nose, it's so huge. Well, most of the world doesn't see it as so huge, but you're exaggerating that feature, or your chin, or your eyes, or whatever feature it is. And you exaggerate that, so it's inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can just have a gross inaccurate, like the in the first case.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So either way, you're not really perceiving your body accurately.
Right.
And you set about to change it. One way to do that is diet. A second way is plastic surgery.
Right.
And we see the increase in plastic surgery now for people trying to change their bodies because they don't see their bodies accurately.
Right.
Or they don't like what they see.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the psychological.
Those are psychological.
Mm-hmm. There's certainly other behavioral things, such as modeling behavior. So if you see someone, like if you grew up in a home where we don't have time to go into this because we're already close to 15 minutes into this podcast. But you know, it makes me want to jump out of my seat with frustration when I hear people talking about kids stealing food from the pantry or mm-hmm. stealing food from the refrigerator and things like that. Because, you know, first off, if they're hungry, they need to eat.
Right.
And second of all, if it's because they're stealing junk food, there probably shouldn't be junk food in those places for them to take and for them to right. eat. So, but again, if food is seen as sort of this commodity that you can hoard or you can steal or you can,
right.
Mm-hmm. that's being used as a reward, you know, I was never one to, you know, if you go potty, I'll give you some M&Ms, or if you
yeah.
go, if you do, do this well, mm-hmm. I'll give you this candy bar or something like that. We never did that in my home because that just doesn't. Why would I want to reward positive behavior with something that's
really not
bad
for
the child? So, but those kinds of things can also mm-hmm. result in some bad eating
right.
behaviors.
Yep.
So,
mm-hmm.
all right. And finally, we had the social part. So the biopsychosocial part. The social, clearly, we all know. I think it's a pretty common thing now where we appreciate the role that society, television programs, mm-hmm. newspaper ads, well, to some extent, not that many people look at the newspaper,
mm-hmm.
but those media have a significant influence on our perception of what normal,
mm-hmm.
quote unquote, normal is.
Right.
And as you mentioned yesterday, you know, with the body mass index of Miss America dropping from 22, which is in the normal range, down to 16.9, which is below the normal range,
mm-hmm.
you know, clearly what we're looking at as typical, healthy, is very different.
The movie stars of the through the 60s,
mm-hmm.
50s, 60s, probably into the 70s, would be considered obese today.
Right. You know, you think about, you've seen those images that compare like Marilyn Monroe to
Lana Turner and,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Linda Carter
right.
and some
Linda
of those very famous women from the, as you said, you know,
50,
a few
60,
decades
70s,
ago.
Right.
And compared to them to famous women now,
mm-hmm.
There is a massive difference
right.
in body shape and in
right.
size, and it's I won't say unfortunate because that sort of understates it, but it's unbelievable that we can make that big of a difference can happen in just a couple.
When you
years.
Were in high school, did you hear of a six pack?
Not much. Mm. Some, but there were a few people, but not much.
It was a concept that was never, I never heard it.
Right.
When I was growing up. It,
yeah.
It just wasn't part of our reality.
Right.
Today, it's a significant part.
Right.
Everybody wants one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now they want an 8-pack. You know. We're not talking about beverages. We're talking about stomach muscles.
Yeah.
And so the whole concept of what an ideal body looks like is changing.
Right.
And it's getting thinner.
Right.
There was a... The Devil Wears Prada, that famous line about six is the new four or something,
mm-hmm.
you know, these sizes. And girls want to be a 2, or they want to be a 0, or they want to be a 00.
Did you watch that movie?
I have girls. I watched it multiple times.
I didn't see that movie.
What? You didn't have
to? Well, I started to, but I thought that was because I thought it says The Devil Wears Piranha. And I was thinking that would be a really interesting movie, but then I was like, I didn't know what Prada was or is. I don't know. I know it's a clothing line or something.
Sort of.
Bags?
You could call it a clothing line.
Bags? Jewelry?
Yes, a little bit of each.
Okay.
Cologne.
Cologne? You are much more cultured in those areas than I am.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that stuff. You come in.
That's because I had girls.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah.
Right.
No, I'm not.
And girls know this stuff. And
sure.
And I as. And
as the
dad's
one who
like
purchases.
Pay for it.
As the one who purchases those.
Right.
Days,
I need to know what I'm buying. So that's.
You have to know what all the logos are. So you know. Wait a minute. I know that logo.
I know.
That one's expensive.
That's right.
Put it back.
No. But that's what these sizes are changing. And so being a zero for any adult, adolescent beyond, to be a zero or a double zero, but that's pretty small. I mean, that's
a size
tiny,
zero
tiny.
Doesn't make sense to me.
I mean, you're talking about pre-adolescent. Pre-pubertal kids wear those sizes.
Yeah.
So, but that's where we're headed. I mean, there's been this gradual, since the 1930s, been this gradual reduction in size.
The other thing, and I'm speaking of this without complete comprehension of it, so there's that warning. But it seems to be that those sizes restart at different categories. So there's misses when we're talking about women's sizes, because I don't think that the same thing exists with men's sizes, but you have misses and you have you know, these different, and you have that same size spectrum,
right?
It misses, but then it starts over in the next size up. Right.
But a size 10 is a size 10.
Yeah, it's confusing to me.
10 used to be average.
Okay.
I mean, if a woman was a 10, a little bit fluffy, but an 8 certainly. You know, not obese, just.
You said fluffy.
That's what they call it.
Is that what they call
it? You need more girls in your life. No.
I don't know how to respond to that.
Don't. If you don't know how to respond, don't respond. Just contain yourself.
Oh, my. We're going to get emails.
So anyway, 8 to 10 used to be average. Today, that's considered embarrassingly large.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 10, 12, you're getting into the, I mean, you're headed into
that's the perspective of most.
Right. And where we see that today, and this has been on the internet the last couple of weeks, is that, I don't know whether men and women are doing this or not, you can Photoshop your selfies.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're taking their Photoshopped selfies. Mm-hmm. To plastic surgeons and say, this is what I want my face to look like.
Right. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So again, regardless of what else you say about it, it speaks to the issue of we want to be thinner and smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's what that whole movement is about,
right.
Is being thinner and smaller. The poor woman who died of surgery,
mm-hmm.
You know, she wanted
right.
to have some kind of surgery on her derriere. And she ended up dying with the surgery.
Yeah.
You know? So we keep shaping our bodies to match some model,
mm-hmm.
and the model
mm-hmm.
is thinner and smaller.
Right.
The fashion houses in Europe are starting to ban women with a lower than a certain body mass
right.
index,
yeah.
and they're saying no. If your BMI is below this, we don't want you out
right.
here because it sets the wrong tone.
Yeah.
Sends the wrong
yeah.
message to young girls.
Yeah. So the power of media and mm-hmm. and advertising and all of that is continues to be
right.
profound.
But it's a trigger. It's a contributing factor, not a cause.
Right.
Okay. So don't
right.
blame the media. The media is a trigger.
Mm-hmm.
There's something else going
right.
on, because one of the things we know is that underneath these eating disorders are psychological distress.
Right. And we know that there's cultural differences
right.
as well. You
right.
know, it's and so that. Again, is a trigger.
Mm-hmm.
It's a contributing factor, but it's not a cause.
Right.
So
that's right. So be careful with cause.
Waded through all that. So
well, all right. But that's one of the reasons we wanted to talk about eating disorders, is they are very complicated.
Yeah.
Once you get into this world, you realize just how complicated it is.
Right.
And so I'm glad we're wading into this mm-hmm. as we mm-hmm. are, but it's been. It's been a wake-up call for me, certainly.
Absolutely.
Is how complicated all of this stuff is.
Yeah, much more so than we thought.
Right,
so.
Right, exactly.
All right, well, that is it for today.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, we are finally going to get into talking about the types of mm-hmm. eating disorders, and we'll kind of dig into each one individually a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry that these podcasts are a little bit longer
right.
than our typical weekday podcasts, but there's just... These are big topics.
But we enjoy spending time with you guys.
Absolutely.
So.
Why not?
Yeah. So keep writing to us.
Yes. That's right. This whole week was because someone
right.
wrote in and asked us about eating disorders. We thought it'd be a great idea to talk about
keep
it.
Keep those ideas coming in.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.